I'm David Gibson. I'm here with Father Gene Hemrick, and we're talking with Dr. Timothy Kelly, Associate Professor of History at St. Vincent College, a Benedictine Catholic college in La Trobe, Pennsylvania. We're discussing his book, The Transformation of American Catholicism, The Pittsburgh Laity and the Second Vatican Council, 1950 to 1972. Dr. Kelly, you've been telling us that some of what happened and was confirmed at Vatican II had really been growing up for a long time among the laity, for example, and the church. Is it safe to say with such deep roots that the voice of the laity is here to stay in the church? I mean, is the collaboration of lay people and clergy, for example, in parishes, is it something that we simply can't get along without anymore?
I would certainly agree with that assessment. I don't know, I mean, even if we wanted to, even if the powers that be said we want to, there just aren't enough priests to pull that off, I think. So, and the lady's interested in being much more engaged and is interested in serving and interested in doing important and significant things in their parish communities and in the broader community. So, yeah, I think so, for sure.
Do you see tensions, or do you hear of tensions in this area these days where people would like a more clerical church? Or do you think that people you run into, by and large, they want this way of doing things to continue?
I see a couple of different strands, and it's hard to say. I can tell you what I think is most popular and what's a little bit less popular. One strand is what we've talked about off this interview, which is the question about a return to that devotional church from the 1950s, the 1940s and 1950s. And there seems to be a movement among some people, and I don't know how widespread it is, to say, look at where we were in the 50s, how strong that church was, how together everybody was, and look at where we are today and how divided we are on central theological questions and how divided we are in practices. If only we could recapture that early 1950s church, that would solve all of our problems. And so there's an effort to try and, I think, reintroduce many of those devotions that had fallen away or that had not been popular. And the question is that successful or is that not? And is it even possible to reclaim or to return to a church that would have been much more prevalent 50 or 60 years ago? My sense is that we'll never get back there, that's a futile effort. I'm not sure that the motives are right even, but I don't think as a practical exercise it's possible to do that. I think the laity are looking for a different kind of experience of their church and of their religion and of their faith.
Yeah. I think we're in a similar situation now with the economy tanking and people feeling, well, we're going to try to get back to where we were. We're never going to get back to where we were. It's not because we can't get back there. It's people are beginning to realize times have changed and we need new forms. We need new wineskins, as it were.
Yeah, I agree. I think we see that lots of transformation possible right now. We're at a pretty important moment in our nation's history and really in the world's history. And I think an important question would be, what's the Catholic response to that? How do you shape the experiences of people who are going to go through some pretty dramatic economic dislocation in America and all over the world? What are the forms of religious expression and experience that would resonate to people going through that? And how can we both shape that experience but also interpret that experience in a meaningful way for people who are living through some pretty dramatic transformation?
Yeah. It's a very good point.
And I don't know that we have an answer to that yet. And part of that might be that we have to listen to a lot of voices within the church and work it out.
Is there something in the experience of the church, the same type of experience that you studied, the way the church was experienced in the 1940s and 1950s? Is there something about the way people are experiencing Catholicism today that makes some people want to say that some of the Vatican II answers or some of the ways of doing things today in the church are not the way they want? Is there something really different about this time as opposed to the 50s that is causing people to want have this nostalgia in some cases?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, because I think that for a lot of people, that nostalgia is there. And I even see it in many of my students who are born in the 1980s and would never experienced a pre-Vatican II church, and yet say, oh, I want to return to the Latin Mass, or I want to return to the kinds of forms of devotional activities that I have heard about as being so powerful and mysterious in the past. So, but those aren't people who experienced it and want to come back to it. Those are people who are, I almost say, have a romantic nostalgia for a time that no longer is here. And I don't know how much they would really enjoy that or resonate with that experience if we were to say that's the normative Catholic experience, now everybody should be doing this. So why are they looking for that is the question on the table, I think. What's compelling people to go there? And that's a good question.
Could it be that they saw this as a more contemplative time in the past, where people were a contemplative time, and that they're searching for it now because of the cacophony that we're facing right now?
Yeah, I think that's a really powerful point. And I would say even not because of the crisis that we face, but even in our flush times, our society is full of material bombardment from commercials and video messages and everything, so that you are constantly being pulled in a particular direction. That direction in our popular culture is toward the consumption of material goods, I think, and seeking after pleasure in almost every area that you can. And so I think that people are so persuaded by that, that they enter that life, and they, as young teenagers, and they want all those new sneakers, they've got to have that jewelry, they've got to have these clothes, but by the time that they're a little bit older, they think, this isn't a meaningful life for me, this isn't the kind of life that I really want. But the messages are so powerful, it's hard, and because that's what people know, it's hard to say there is another path to a meaningful life, because I think we even see people saying, okay, I've got to consume differently to get to a more meaningful life. I still want to consume, that's still the behavior that I know, I'm a consumer above all else.
Yes.
But I got to figure out a way to, and I don't know that that's going to be possible. You know, I don't know, having the most rosary beads of anybody in the whole parish, I don't know if that's going to make you feel more fulfilled. I think you've got to move toward a different way of thinking about the world and yourself in the world.
We do live in a terrifically complicated world in which every situation we encounter and need to analyze, and every difficult situation, is complex, highly complex often. We also live in a time when people are very fearful of some of the forces that be, of extremist religious movements that are terrorist movements and so forth. Do you think fear, or just the overwhelming complexity of so many things, drives some people to look for something that isn't so complex and inspires hope?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that. I think that there is, and particularly if we could find an easy solution and we could resolve things very quickly, that would be great. I think people do have that desire. But the church in the 1950s was not a simple church. I mean, it was a highly complex organism. And so I wonder if looking at that church is the model towards simplicity or the reduction of complexity. But that's a good question. I think that your diagnosis is right on. We live in a very complex society. We get lots of messages from lots of different arenas about who we ought to be and how we ought to behave and what's good and true and just. And I think it is hard for people to anchor themselves in what we might objectively call a reasonable and true life purpose. And that's a hard task.
You know, that church, you hit a good point. That church in the past, in the 50s, was more of a God and me. The idea of community didn't come into play until later, and then that became a big play on word. You know, community became a big thing. But it was God and me, and then there was a church triumphalism at that time. You're talking about really a complex times. And when Vatican II came in, they tried to make it much simpler. But that triumphant church, you know, the cardinal, when he came down the aisle, you know, the big train and the two boys and the polyphony music and everything, which was wonderful. I mean, but it was the king. It was the monarch coming down. And it was a church that, and didn't, everything was controlled. You had the school system, you had the nuns. We saw all knew where we were. where we're supposed to fit in.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's very true. And that, and a lot of that you could never recapture. We're not,
no,
we don't have the...
We don't have it.
We don't have the female.
Forms aren't there anymore.
Yeah, they're not there.
Yeah.
And so and maybe the one of the early questions in this interview was, why are we seeking after a return to that? And I think part of that is, I think people, my students, look back at their grandparents' generation and say that was a generation worth emulating. And they see a lot of problems in their parents' generation. You see a lot of divorce, you see a lot of conflict, you see a lot of people really struggling with various different problems. And they look back, they look back two generations and say that's a simpler, better time. My grandparents really love each other. My grandparents lived a life devoted to family. My grandparents have everything, all of their priorities in order. And so I want to return to that generation.
I would like to say, since my father would probably be the grandparent you're talking about, that he did nothing but work.
Yeah.
His life wasn't simple.
No, I agree. I think we missed it. I think we've imposed the romantic notion about what that was like. And there were real struggles there. There were real struggles.
Where do you see the greatest gifts the laity can make to the church's life today? What is the laity's great talent, or what are their great talents?
That's a wonderful question, and I don't know that I have a good answer to that. But maybe the answer is there's a polyphony of possibility in the laity. And so different laity have different talents. And I think there's a genuine enthusiasm about participating. And so if we keep ourselves open to that, we're going to see good things happen. We're going to see the laity engaged in the church in ways that they haven't been before. We'll see a vibrant church. We'll see an active church. We'll see a church that's engaged in all areas of life and that's growing and expanding. And I think right now we're looking at a retrenching church. We're looking at lower and lower mass attendance almost every year. We see a disaffection, a lay disaffection from a lot of the forms that we're trying to insist that we follow. And so I don't know what those new forms would be, and I don't know where the laity would take us, but they're sincere, they're authentically genuine, they're good Catholics, they want to be good Catholics. So we need to listen to them.
Okay, on that note, thank you very much.
Okay.
It's very hopeful.
Thank you, this was terrific.